All right, so pretend it's not here. Just pretend it's not here.
First, it's August 18th, around 3:30 in the afternoon. We have no idea what we're doing. This is our first attempt at recording a podcast. Yay! So this is Danan, and I'm an evolutionary ecologist, and I'm 3 years into my PhD.
Hi, I'm Nate, and I am a paleontologist, and I am 2 years into my PhD.
I'm Morgan, I'm a soil scientist, and I am 3 years into my PhD as well.
Also, she's terrified.
And I am terrified of having my voice recorded.
Don't worry, I am too.
For the record.
Somehow we're all going to get over this together. Just talk and pretend we're having a normal conversation, because we are having a normal conversation, and then I'll edit this down later. Okay, so first I'm going to read kind of the list of questions, and then we can decide where we want to start this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the general kind of topics of discussion. First is, how relatable do you find most science and nature documentaries? And do they make the things that are presented in them seem like particularly exotic or out of reach to normal people or to you as a scientist, even? How accurately or how well is your field represented by documentaries? Is the fact that Quest Productions are a little rough around the edges actually a good thing for helping to break down the walls between us as researchers and everyone else in the world? What was your perception of your field, or of science in general, maybe when you were a kid versus when you started, versus now? Let's see. When in your career did you actually start actively sciencing? This was kind of interesting, because John and I were talking about it, and it turned out that, like, most of us, I think, got lab experience in undergrad, and for physics, that's not really a thing, so he didn't actively start, like, doing science until he got into grad school, which I thought was really interesting.
What is the definition of actively doing science? Like creating your own data, I guess?
Let's say it's kind of loose. Anything from creating your own data, which is really actively sciencing, mm-hmm. to
helping in a lab, or like...
to helping in a lab, okay. And being generally exposed to, like, the methods and stuff in a hands-on active way.
Okay.
Does that sound great?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like assisting with data collection. Yeah, it doesn't have to be more data.
Okay.
Yeah, assisting with data collection. Let's go with more than washing dishes, but right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What is science and what does science mean versus, like, actually, versus how it's taught in schools and how it's represented in schools? we probably won't get to all of these things right now, because this is kind of a lot of random shit, but, we can at least start. So yeah, like, John and I were talking about this the other day as we were trying to edit video. We're editing the orangutan video right now, and it's a little, like, I'm really pleased with how it looks. And how the interview went and stuff like that. And, like, obviously the more we do these things, the better they're going to get. But I'm really pleased in general with how it went and the quality of kind of material that we have to turn into something, which will someday actually happen. But I'm always looking at these things and I'm like, I want it to be prettier. I want the sound to be better. Basically, I want them to look like a nature documentary. Always looking at them and being like, it could be better, it could be prettier, it doesn't have that super glossy, like, gorgeous feel to it, so we're not there yet. And I realized as we were editing this that that's not actually an appropriate way to think about it, and that the fact that what we're presenting is not that pretty, even when it's, like, well done and well polished, which obviously I want us to be producing, like, good solid content, but even when it's great for us, it's not going to be at that level, and that might actually be a good thing. And this is where I'm curious how relatable you guys find most science and nature documentaries, and how you feel about them in relation to things in your field and things that you've done.
No, I think what you said was a good point. Like, it doesn't have to be, like, super cinematically beautiful. Like, yes, Planet Earth is awesome, but not every documentary has to be like that. And, I mean, I enjoy those documentaries, but, yeah, it's almost, like, seems too good to be true sometimes, where it almost seems very, I don't know, staged. So you sort of, at least I subconsciously think of it as a little bit fiction-y, which may or may not actually be the case, but I think that does, in a way, sort of distance you from what you're watching, and yeah, it seems more intangible, I guess. As far as how, like, documentaries represent, like, my research area, that's sort of a double-edged sword, I guess, because it depends how you look at it. So in the overall scheme of things, I feel like my field is represented very well in documentaries, but mostly it's the dinosaur side of paleontology that gets all the attention. So, you know, the study of paleontology is just basically the study of prehistoric life, and that can be any type of life, you know, over the course of 580-ish million years. So you can study anything from, like, trilobites to plants to trace fossils to insects, you know, of course, dinosaurs and mammals, too. But a lot of those other non-dinosaur groups just don't really get a lot of attention.
Do you think that the dinosaurs are depicted accurately in the documentaries or other science-based materials that you've seen? So even from things on Facebook, are they accurate depictions of what the dinosaurs were actually like?
I think the depictions are progressing in the same way that the actual scientific understanding of what they might have looked like progresses. So, you know, like, decades ago, they didn't know that dinosaurs had feathers at all. So they were all represented very scaly and reptilian-looking. Now, in more recent times, people are discovering that dinosaurs, especially some of the more carnivorous theropod dinosaurs that are more closely related to birds, you know, actually did have quite a bit of feathers. But there's constant adjustments there. So I think that the artistic reconstructions are kind of ever-changing, the same with the sciences. Like, I wouldn't really blame them for that. But, yeah, I mean, and then, of course, you know, with older fossils like dinosaurs, it's harder to get accurate reconstruction. So, for example, if they want to do more documentaries on, say, quaternary, or, you know, fossils within the last 2.5 million years or so, you know, we actually get, like, mammoth mummies preserved and stuff like that. So you can actually, you know, reconstruct these things with quite a bit more accuracy. But unfortunately, non-dinosaur fossils just don't kind of get the attention that dinosaurs do.
So sad, because there are so many weird mammals out there.
Oh yeah, especially the earlier ones.
Yeah.
And like, those are crazy.
All of the funky aplodontids that used to exist.
Yeah.
Like,
what even is that?
Mountain beavers.
Oh.
They're a monotypic family. Yeah, they're a monotypic family. So, like, mountain beavers are the only thing that still exists. Mm-hmm. They're all alone by themselves, and they're real, real weird. They're a kind of rodent. But that family is also the only, like, grouping of rodent that ever produced a rodent with horns.
Oh, my God.
They did all kinds of weird shit for a while. Like, all kinds of weird shit. And it's pretty great.
All right. New idea.
Yeah.
For some material for Quest.
Yeah. Or ungulates. Some of the, or, like, the ungulates just had these crazy horn patterns, like forked nose horns and stuff.
Oh, that's right.
Like slingshot horn, basically, on his nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff.
And oreodonts. I mean,
yeah.
Who doesn't love a giant pig sheep?
Yep.
Don't answer that question.
Or the hell pigs, right?
Those are
crazy, too.
So many weird mammals.
Yeah. They do get, like, a decent amount of attention, I guess, relative to other non-dinosaur creatures. But still, I think everything is pretty much overshadowed in paleontology compared to dinosaurs. So.
Yeah.
I mean, dinosaurs are cool. They're great. But other critters could use their time in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm. They need attention, too. Yeah.
Definitely. They need love, too.
Especially the small mammals that nobody cares about. Yeah. There is sort of this pattern of trophy hunting with mammal fossils, the same way like you would hunt the megafauna in Africa or whatever, where, especially in older fossil sites, it was the big, sexy fossils. They got collected. They got all the attention. Like, you know, the saber-toothed cats, American lion, short-faced bear, mammoth, mastodon. And all those things are cool, but don't forget there's a lot of other animals that were also cool, but smaller, and haven't really been studied as much.
Yep.
Like the mountain beavers.
So weird.
I need to look up pictures of these things.
Here. We've got, like, another question off of that for you guys, but first, Morgan, how do you...
Yeah, when I think of nature documentaries, I go big, and I think of, I looked it up. They're adorable.
And freaky, right?
I don't know. I kind of want to cuddle it. Like, look at this one. It just looks adorable.
I think that was a regular beaver.
That's an actual beaver. That's an actual beaver. I'm talking about this thing. Wait, Yeah, that thing.
It sort of looks like a beaver crossed with a bull.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd still cuddle it.
I mean, that one does look pretty snuggly.
looks nice.
Apparently, these guys live somewhere on my parents' property. The dogs killed one once.
Wow.
That's cool. That would be an awesome skeleton.
That's what I was just going to say. Did you keep it?
Yeah. No, we took it to the Burke.
What is that?
We took it to the museum at the University of Washington.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have any, they collect animals that have been killed by a variety of other animals for taphonomic purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And mountain beavers are pretty damn uncommon. So they didn't have many, and they didn't have any that have been killed by dogs. So they were very happy. Wonderful. If it was something that they wouldn't have benefited from strongly, I definitely would have rearticulated it myself.
Can we pull up a reconstruction of some of the past horned ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want to see.
Can I spell?
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like a mole thing with horns.
Oh, my goodness.
God, it's so cute. It looks so happy.
I don't want to cuddle that one.
I do.
I think there's something deeper here.
If I remember correctly, they're not too terribly old, are they? Or were they older? I
want to
say like Pliocene.
I think that's right.
Like maybe a couple million years old or something.
Yeah. I think that's right. Like, we were... Okay, that is not what I was looking for at all, but that is also adorable.
Wow. What is that?
It says it is an armadillo lizard. Yep.
Wow.
Yep, that looks about right. I had no idea this existed.
No.
Is it a painful tail to chew on?
It does. It looks kind of painful to beat.
Yeah.
Like, you'd just be constantly stabbing yourself.
Yeah. Like, I feel like you could never actually get comfortable when you're, like, settling down to sleep.
Exactly. You're, like, wearing armor all the time. Like, I can't quite put this where I want, but it's good enough.
Oh, God, now I'm stabbing myself.
You can never use your arm full for a pillow.
Oh, so sad.
A sad life.
I don't know how I'd get to sleep at all as this guy. All right.
He's frustrated. That's why he's eating his tail.
Probably.
Take away the spikes.
Yeah.
Bite them off.
Yeah. It's the only way.
Just get rid of these.
Finally be able to sleep, damn it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so how is soil science depicted?
Rarely, but accurately, I would say. There are a couple really good soil science documentaries. But I think my general thought, and even myself, when I think of documentaries about nature, it doesn't go to soil science. It goes to exotic places that I will probably never visit, although I would love to, but I probably won't. And so this is this wonderland where these, like, super weird, crazy creatures exist that are oh so beautiful, but I'm only going to see them on the TV screen.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so definitely out of reach for me, being someone who is generally interested in this already, as far as a thing that might actually happen in my life. So with soil science documentaries, I think they do make them more relatable, and they get mm-hmm. people thinking about dirt, which is rarely the case. People think it's just there, and it's just something you walk on and build things on, but they don't think about what it does for the planet as a whole and how important it is. And so I think, yeah, they're depicted accurately, but very much underrated.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. In some ways, then, it's possible that soil science is depicted in a more reasonable way.
What do you mean?
Than a lot of things, like, possible.
Okay, yeah.
I mean that, like, since there's not... I apologize for the way I'm going to put this. There's not as much glamour.
It's dirty work.
Literally. Maybe not figuratively. Like, anyway, like, since there's not as much potential for glamour there to begin with, like, maybe they're presented less kind of glamorously.
Sure, mm-hmm. less embellishment than with
yeah.
paleo, where you can, you know...
Yeah, because I feel like...
Sort of let your mind wander, and it leaves, like, the producers of the show, like, flexibility to be, you know, creative or whatever, and kind of imaginative, but...
Yeah.
At the same time, that might be taken as, like... You know, there's evidence for this when there actually isn't evidence for that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, or like in ecology, I see a lot of documentaries about ecology that are exactly like Morgan was saying, like gorgeous, gorgeous places that you're never going to go. And the representation of ecologists that visit these places are that these are amazing people who you are never going to meet, can never meet, can certainly never ever be, and you're never going to see these places. And I've had this experience, and I'm really curious whether you guys have had this experience, when watching some documentaries that I didn't even really realize, like I've kind of caught myself doing it before, but I didn't really stop and think about it until John and I were talking the other day. Where, like, I'll see something on a documentary and be like, my God, that place is gorgeous. I'm never going to get to, wait a minute, I've been there before. You know? It's like, shit, wait a minute, I've actually seen this place. Or similarly, like, with field techniques or with lab techniques, either one. Like, seeing ancient DNA extractions or seeing people do field work. Where the way that things are presented is very... distance, very much you as the viewer can't be part of this kind of thing. Where, like, from the perspective of somebody who has done some of the things, at least, that are being shown in these documentaries is kind of strange, you know? Because it's like, we can do some of these things, and we do some of these things, as many of these things as anybody does, because nobody does all of it, you know? But part of the way that it's presented is, like, you know, some of these places you are never going to go, but others, like, you can go, or you can do these things, and it is totally possible to participate in research at a variety of levels. And I don't think that documentaries usually actually do a good job of making you feel like you can be involved in that in any kind of way.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, with paleo, there's not really as many sexy places to go to most of the time. A lot of where you're going to find the best fossils is, like, you know, middle of nowhere desert.
Yeah. But the work
North America
is presented as being really sexy.
Yes, yes. And I've noticed that, yeah, there is this sort of consistent and unfortunate pattern in a lot of the documentaries where they will focus in an interview, an expert in the field, you know, a professor or famous researcher that has, you know, published a lot on this kind of stuff and they will just interview that one expert or a couple experts, and they don't really do a good job focusing on a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, so all of the students and the volunteers that are also involved in these projects. And so the audience watching it might not think that, hey, I can actually do science or, you know, become a paleontologist or at least volunteer and assist with paleontology, when actually at a lot of sites you can, especially a lot of museum sites. So I do think that's something that they could improve on. Yeah, because it's not really as inaccessible as the documentaries will sort of make it seem.
This is where I'm kind of wondering if the fact that some of our content is... that our content is less polished than a nature documentary can actually be a strength for us. Because I think that that might help to kind of break down that barrier a bit. Because I've noticed even in things like... I don't know if either of you guys watch... what's it called again? There's two of them with the same dude. One of them is Destination Truth, where the guy, like, runs out and looks for Sasquatch and stuff like that. And the other one is, like... it's hilarious. and the other one is more, like, the guy and his little team are, like, exploring these things from a humorous but generally scientific perspective, right? And the other one is more exploring, like, various legends or mythologies or things like that, and whether or not they appear to have any truth to them. And, like, the thing is really ridiculous, and the people are, like, clearly real people being very genuine about what they're doing and how they're feeling and being super sarcastic and stuff like that. And even with that, the kind of impression is, like, you can't do this or you can't be this or something like that. Because of, like, the way it's shot and edited and stuff. So, yeah, I'm wondering if our more kind of just take this camera out and do it kind of thing...
it's more raw and more real because of that.
Yeah.
Even
if that helps to bring people in and feel more welcome into our world.
Well, and even, like, we visit a park nearby and we take a camera and we do some footage of us on our hike. It is very relatable and people can then see themselves doing that exact same thing.
Exactly. And instead of seeing, like, the crazy nature documentary footage of Yosemite being like, oh my god, this is the view when you're flying over Half Dome or something like that. It's like, this is the view hiking around Yosemite, and you can go and do this at any time, and it's still just as amazing.
Yeah. We should pretty easily be able to schedule a behind-the-scenes tour at La Brea, if that would be something they'd be interested in.
Yeah!
You know, observe all of the volunteers and all the workers that are, you know, every day handling these fossils and doing active research on them.
That would be really, really cool to be able to film. And, yeah, also to kind of point out to people that if you live in the L.A. area, you too can go volunteer at La Brea, and it's not as exciting as you think because you're just perpetually picking through Matrix.
Or excavating. I think a lot of volunteers actually do, like, the deposit excavations. But, yeah.
Oh, nice. Why am I here again?
And it's right there in downtown Los Angeles. A lot of it's amazing to me that so many people I talk to in LA, like, have never been there.
Really?
Yeah. It's like one of those things, I guess, like the Statue of Liberty in New York, where, you know, they hear about it but just never get around to seeing it. Like, it's amazing. And even if you don't want to pay, like, the $5 or $10 to go into the museum, the park itself is free, and you can still wander around and see the active tar seeps bubbling up, and that's where you can actually watch the excavators digging.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, that's just so weird. Like, I've been wanting to go to La Brea since I was like 6. The first time I went there, like, we were on a 3 or 4 hour long layover between here and Costa Rica, and I dragged my parents there. I mean, not that it took much work with my parents, but but, like, that's weird that most people in LA don't know that it's there, or, I mean, haven't been.
Yeah.
So good.
Huh. definitely seeing more normal people involved in science in the documentaries, I think, mm-hmm. is something that people should start doing more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. I guess now I'd like to talk a little bit more about maybe this is the best way to do it. Like, how did you guys get into your fields? What were your perceptions about your field before starting versus, mm-hmm. like, now?
I guess I'll hit on that first. So I guess I was, like, your typical dorky, dinosaur-loving little kid who dreamed of being a paleontologist. And then as I got older, you know, like, 10 and above, I sort of grew out of it because you're just not really encouraged to pursue that kind of thing in a lot of societies, I guess. including where I lived in New England, where I didn't even know, you know, there were fossils in New England until I started my undergraduate degree, and then realized that there's actually a ton of dinosaur trace fossils in Western Massachusetts. I grew out of it for the longest time. I knew I wanted to do something in science, but I wasn't thinking of paleo as a valid career option. And, you know, my parents sort of discouraged it at an early age. But, you know,
yeah, is paleo a valid career option?
Yeah, you know, I still go back and forth. You know, they wanted a more normal, maybe steady, stable job for me.
So for all you people out there, real people do science. Normal people do not do science.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Then I just was taking a sort of general science class I needed for my biology degree at that point. See, it was a while ago. I don't remember the name of it. I think it was like evolution and diversity or something like that. But my teacher was actually, the professor of that class was a vertebrate paleontologist. And so that was my first time I'd ever actually interacted with a real paleontologist. And I was like, you know, oh crap, they're real people. Like, they're not just those people you see in the documentaries. And so later that semester, I worked up the courage to approach her after class and, you know, talk to her about my interest in paleo. And she was, very accommodating and, got me started on some independent studies, working on those dinosaur footprints, and that was sort of my gateway back into paleo, and I never really looked back. So it was sort of a childhood dream that I grew out of and then accidentally stumbled back into, and yeah, that's where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can say, as a kid, I never once thought about soil, except for the extent of, like, oh, I've fallen and now I'm dirty, and I should probably get this off of me. No, I was...
Who was that person? Right? Get it off of you!
Get it off... What kind of child was I? But, yeah, no, I just was playing sports as a kid, hanging out with my friends, didn't... As far as, like, a dream job, it was, oh, look, I'll be a doctor or something like that. Like, sure. That sounds like the right thing to do.
Well, in a way.
Just Dr. Dirt. Different type of doctor. But so, yeah, so I went on a family vacation to Alaska in kind of the beginning of high school, and that was one of the first major things I ever did outside. And I was just like, oh my god, this is the coolest thing, and I need to make sure that I do something to protect this, because everyone needs to come here, and everyone needs to see this. And so then, once, you know, some time went on, went to school for college, and, you know, what major should I be? Oh, biotechnology, that sounds good. I'll start there. I like science, and that's, like, biology and, like, some other things mixed together, and, like, that sounds good. I'll do that. And then I really learned what biotechnology was, and I was like, no, I don't want to change things. I want to keep things the way they are and save them as is. And so then I started taking some, like, conservation biology classes and more just environmental studies, and just felt kind of right at home and that it really meshed. And then I had a friend convince me to join the university's soil judging team. And at first I was like, wait, what? You dig holes and you jump in them and you like make mud balls and classify them as different things? Like, no, I mean, soil's cool, but like, no. And then I took a soil science class and was like, oh, yes, 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 I want to judge the soil. And so I joined this soil judging team where I purposefully got very dirty and fell in love with it and then just kept continuing it as the years went on. Here I am.
Just dirty all the time.
Dirty all the time.
So, to some extent, I think I've always known that I was going to end up an ecologist. So, both of my parents are, trained in biology and do that in different ways. So my parents met over the body of a dead dolphin, so that should probably tell you something already.
That's awesome.
And, my mom is an aquatic biologist, like trained as a marine biologist, and she's more of an aquatic biologist and an educator. And my dad is like got his master's in veterinary anatomy and worked in like biotech kind of stuff for a long time, and then went straight for the tech, and now he's a computer dude. Because at the time, biotech didn't actually make money. Which is weird to think about. Anyway. So I've been playing outside in, like, kind of exposed to research sort of ways pretty much my entire life. Because when my mom was doing water quality sampling, when I was little, she would just take me along and have me, like, haul buckets and stuff like that. When I was big enough. And then she tried to convince me that I should try doing other things. And I thought about a lot of other things, and then I was like, no, actually, no, I do really, really want to be an ecologist because I want to be outside all the time, and otherwise I'm not gonna be outside all the time, and that sounds terrible. So, yeah, I started, like, undergrad and knew that I wanted to do ecology and thought that I would focus on, like, humans in the environment kind of stuff, like human-environment interactions and how humans
ruin everything.
Yeah, basically. more like what cultural practices don't ruin everything so we can focus on making shit like that continue to happen. And how do we know when and how humans are ruining everything? So, like, how do we do ecology, and then fit humans into the mix in a way that actually makes sense, which is not as big an area of research as what it seems like it should be. And I've always been really, really excited about paleontology and evolutionary biology, and I was always like, you know, evolutionary biology is great, but it doesn't actually have that many applications for conservation. Then, like, because I was in my undergrad, evolution and ecology were linked together as a major, so I ended up taking, like, a couple of evolutionary biology classes, which I was super excited about taking because I love it, and then they were like, this is why evolutionary biology is super important for conservation. I was like, maybe I should just do paleo all the time. finally arrived at where I'm at now, where for the moment I'm doing mostly, like, longer-term timescale than normal ecology, but much shorter-term timescale than paleo, but I feel very kind of nebulous about the entire thing, because, like, time and space are both really, really important.
I think our last question should be a combo of what is sciencing as an official mm-hmm. term, and when did we start actively sciencing ourselves? Which you both kind of answered a little bit.
A little bit, but we can get into that more
more.
Mm-hmm. You mean like science and practice versus like how it's taught in school?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like just defining, yeah, what
is
sciencing
like,
is.
When would you say you started identifying as a scientist? When in your career? Was it before grad school or after? Or sorry, after starting?
Yeah.
So basically, if people aren't planning on going to grad school or having an active research project of their own, how can they science in their daily lives?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of different ways to define sciencing, kind of like there's a lot of different ways to define a species, that can all potentially be useful, like it's at its most basic form, I guess sciencing would just be applying scientific reasoning and hypothesis testing.
Yeah, or just asking general questions and making observations in your environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to some extent, like, sciencing is something that everybody does every day. If you have to make a decision and you're using any kind of rational means, then this is just
a form of science.
Yeah, it's a form of science. So if you're, say, using a Ouija board to make all your decisions, then you're not sciencing. Not that there's anything against that, just that is not sciencing. But if you are, collecting facts about something and then making a judgment based on the facts and then applying that judgment and seeing what occurs, then that is roughly
science.
Yeah.
Science.
Looking at things objectively.
Mm-hmm.
So taking it another level of being a scientist, when did you guys start associating yourselves as a scientist?
I guess for me it would probably overlap with when I actually got involved with my independent studies as an undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
Before that you're taught the scientific method and all that and you take your few undergraduate biology major classes, but at that point I still just felt like, a student, I guess, not really a scientist. It was when I was actually actively going out and observing things in the field and collecting data. That's when I guess I identified as a scientist, started to actually feel like one.
So when you made the transition from learning to doing?
Yes. So I guess about halfway through my undergrad, I would say I started to feel like a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
A very poor and unexperienced one. Inexperienced one at that point, but still a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably similar. Like, I had the... I went to a science magnet school in junior high. And they had us do, like, a science fair every year, and then I kept doing that after junior high. So, and, like, with my parents being who they are, my science fair projects got very elaborate. I won't say Machiavellian. Just elaborate. The rat was fine.
Oh, God.
He was. He was very well treated, other than the little mazes. Anyway, with that and with the stuff that my mom did, I had the opportunity to start participating in like data collection and things like that, like very early stages of becoming a scientist, pretty young, which I'm really thankful for, but I don't think I actually really started identifying as a proper scientist, like I trusted what I was doing at all, until also about halfway through undergrad, when I joined a well, the Canopy Dynamics Lab at the University of Washington, and was hired to be a field tech and was suddenly, like, running a good chunk of our field project, and, like, being about 50% of a field project and figuring out a lot of what was and was not possible. That made me feel like a scientist pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm similar as far as when I moved from more of a student to working in a lab, so working in a soil chemistry lab on campus, getting a lab coat. that was when it was
That's
really official.
Yeah,
it was official then. Yeah, and then you know, kind of designing a project and working on that, and you know, collecting what was, you know, my own data and presenting that, and yeah, taking off from there.
Yeah. So there are a lot of people who are scientists who don't ever get their PhD, who don't ever get their master's, and just think it's important to emphasize that you don't necessarily need either of those things to not just actively contribute to science, which anyone can do, but to actively be a scientist. Hoping to have kind of the same conversation with my mom in a few days to get kind of more of an insight into that. Shit, where was I going?
It was going well.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, so I think all of us felt like we became a scientist and we're not just learning about science when we were in our undergrad, so getting a bachelor's degree. But we all did science before then. And
yeah.
So I think that's the thing to take home. Is that anyone listening, whether they are in school, graduated from high school, went to college, it doesn't matter what level you're at. If, you know, you're questioning things, making a hypothesis, seeking the facts and making a conclusion, then you're doing science too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I remember where I was at least eventually going. I don't remember how I was planning on getting there. How did you guys feel about, like, your high school science classes? How did they make you feel about science? Any kind of science. Like, you can do specific fields or, like, any of the above. But how did your high school classes make you feel about science?
So, I grew up in a very small and sheltered town in Massachusetts.
Also, I'm sorry, just to add to that, like, feel free to elaborate how you feel your school experience with what science supposedly was differs from how you feel about what science actually is, or how you feel about science in general. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry.
So, let's see.
We'll figure this out someday.
Not to bash my small-town high school too much, but, yeah, I went into college not knowing what I wanted to do at all because the scientific curriculum was not that great. I won't name the high school. I don't throw anybody under the bus. But, it wasn't well done, and I didn't feel very engaged or interested in the science classes I was taking in middle school or high school. So it really wasn't until college that, I started taking those classes and really, really got into it. So, yeah. I think it's important to get students interested in science at an early age and to sort of have a really positive scientific learning experience for them. I got kind of lucky and stumbled back into it, but I easily could have gone into a different direction and never pursued science at all. So.
I went to a private high school and had an awesome experience with science classes while I was there. A lot of it seemed almost too cool. It's like, whoa, oh my, look at these colors that are developing from this, you know, chemical reaction, or, whoa, this makes this explode. Like, you know, it was kind of all these wow moments. And then we had marine biology and zoology was a course I took as a senior, and that was, I think, a pretty unique experience. But I had a good introduction to science in high school, which did help carry over into me wanting to pursue some sort of science when I got to college.
Cool. Yeah. So I, like I said before, I went to a science magnet junior high. And that was awesome, you know, as one would expect. I had multiple teachers who were effectively Miss Frizzle. And in high school, it was really variable for me. I went to multiple different high schools and got variable experiences sort of within and between schools. So I had a couple of really, really fantastic instructors and also some who were, you know, kind of terrible and boring. I think it's really common for people to not be interested, though, in science because classes make it seem like it's either out of reach for them, like they're not smart enough to do it, or like science is really dry and boring, and that all it ever is like worksheets where you do this little experiment where you know the result beforehand. And that is, like, the way that we're taught to think about science in schools, and like, as an evolutionary biologist, I feel very personally about this. I imagine that we all feel very personally about this in different ways, only you and I probably the same way. We're like, the way that evolution is taught in most high schools sucks. Yeah. And it's no wonder that a lot of Americans have a lot of questions about whether or not evolution is a thing because of the way that it's presented to you. Like, it makes no sense. And a lot of schools, like, this is the only kind of education about science that you get at all, is basically in that kind of way, where you're like, I don't know that I trust any of this stuff because it doesn't really make sense.
Unless you're in the Southeast, then you might not even get that.
I was just gonna say, yeah. Catholic you school never not. Had evolution.
Yeah, and then there's that. And it's like, it's no wonder that so many people have trouble with it. Oh, God. But how at a Catholic school? Like, Catholics have supposedly been on board with it for, like, 70 years.
Yeah.
Shit.
They just don't... maybe mentioned, but, like, it is by no means a highlight of any science course.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So... So there's
the creation in 7 days or 6 days, mm-hmm. whatever it was, sort of thing.
Seven.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the last one.
Oh, the seventh day was
just a rest day.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I just wasn't paying attention when I was in school at all. Maybe that was it.
At this point, it's probably fair to mention, though I'm not judging at all based on what you just said, more reflecting on my personal experiences, that how you do in high school or undergrad is not a good reflection at all of how good a scientist you would be. And never let anybody tell you that it would be. Because it's not. So, like, I think people are frequently taught in schools that what science is the body, is actually the body of what, like, science produces. And that frequently what science actually is not taught very well in a lot of schools.
Yeah, I'll agree with
how
that.
And how would you guys, I guess, like, what would you guys feel that a good way to phrase the distinction is? I mean, I could, but I don't want to do all the talking. Or I can.
I think you should, because for me, okay. I think I saw a pretty real picture of what science is, and I got
that's
a good,
great.
Yeah, I got a good taste of it, so...
That's great.
Yeah.
Just not the evolution.
Right. We just skipped a few important lessons. But the lessons that were taught were done in a really good and inspiring way.
That's great. And like I said, I had like some pretty variable science teachers, so some of them were really, really good at getting this point across and some of them not so much. That what I have found, at least most people believe science is the series of facts that science produces. And what people are taught is, you know, the series of facts. Whereas science itself is research, is the, at least as I see it, is research, is the methods by which we produce those facts. And is also kind of a culture, like the facts, for lack of a better colloquial way to put it, that science produces are never clear-cut and never straightforward, because science is a process and a means of discovery. And we're always looking for answers, and we're always looking for better and clearer answers. And the body of work that we produce, until we have a hell of a lot of facts and all facts point the same direction, don't mean anything. Because we're looking for answers. We're trying to figure those answers out. And that's the process of science, is trying to figure those answers out in a way that is quantifiable and testable and repeatable, really. And that all of the things that we discover through that process are great and wonderful, but until we can check them in multiple kind of scientific ways, those facts themselves shouldn't be taken too seriously. And then ultimately they eventually can be, and then we build more elaborate experiments to test various parts of those facts and to flesh things out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay.
Done.
Any last things anybody feels like saying?
Science education, especially at the pre-college level, I think could be improved in a lot of areas. And I think one of the most important things is to have more hands-on experiments, more field trips.
Yeah,
doing like the worksheet stuff, I mean, that just doesn't do science justice.
No, and that's not what it really is.
No, it's going out and observing your environment and, collecting data and then making your own conclusions based on those data. I think if I had more of that as a, middle schooler and high schooler, I would have, gravitated towards science at a much younger age. Like I said, it seems to have worked out okay for me, but it easily couldn't have. I probably would have, if I didn't stumble onto really cool science classes in undergrad, I would have done something completely different and not have enjoyed my job as much. So I think that probably happens to a lot of people. And better classes for future scientific, the future science generation, I guess.
Yeah, and the future generations of everyone.
Yeah.
Because I'm a firm believer, at least, that science should be something that everyone, to some extent, can participate in, and everyone at least understands.
Right, if you're not going to be, like, a full-fledged scientist, at least be, somewhat literate in science. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Sure. That was fun.